Chick-fil-A has made no secret of its Christian values, and now its president is making it clear that when it comes to opposing gay marriage, he and his company are guilty as charged.
Really? So what exactly is Chick-fil-A CEO Dan Cathy's problem with same-sex marriage?
I think we're inviting God's judgment on our nation when we shake our fist at him and say, you know, we know better than you as to what constitutes a marriage, that we would have the audacity to try to redefine what marriage is all about.
There was bound to be some pushback, and this weekend, the Muppets took to Facebook to say, the Jim Henson Company has notified Chick-fil-A that we do not wish to partner with them on any future endeavors. The Muppets were partnered with Chick-fil-A? Did Big Bird know anything about that?
Hey, guys.
What's everybody eating? Nothing, Big Bird. Everything's cool. Has anyone seen my kids? Anyway, it's not just the Muppets. Boston Mayor Thomas Menino also had a message for Chick-fil-A.
Mayor Menino says a Southern fast food chain's discriminatory policy not going to fly in Boston.
He won't allow Chick-fil-A into Boston unless they change their policy.
Wow. Open your eyes. Open your eyes, owner of Chick-fil-A. You're being such an ass, not even Boston will tolerate it.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. I'm alive. Oh, man. I don't know what to tell you. If you hang out in the Facebook group for My Life as a Foodie, you probably already know about this then. Those of you who don't, we've got another situation. Katrina's cancer came back, so we're fighting that again. And it's kind of taking precedent over everything. But, you know, eventually it gets back to where, you know, I started the show because it was a nice outlet for me and it's always been there for me. So I kind of needed to just kind of talk and do this and get my head off of, you know, the other stuff that's happening, all the drama. So I'm back. I hope there are a few of you left. If not, that's okay. Maybe you'll come back soon. There's so much going on and so much I wanted to talk about. You know, it's vegetable season right now. We're in the heat of it. There's so much available in the summer. And right now, given everything that's going on with Chick-fil-A, and we're going to talk about that today, it's a good time to give all fast food chains the middle finger and eat some more vegetables. Eat more vegetables. I mean, there's so much out there and so much we can do with vegetables. And they're so good for you. So I wanted to talk about that. I want to talk about the Chick-fil-A thing, of course. I want to talk about the foie gras ban here in California, which is also stupid. A lot of other stuff. You know, this whole Chick-fil-A thing's crazy. I mean, it got out of hand. The guy, Dan Cathy is his name. He's the CEO of Chick-fil-A. If you have been living under a rock or maybe just weren't paying attention, he basically, it came out, he's a Christian, a heavy-duty Christian guy, and he came out against gay marriage. And it turns out he gave money to this group that basically they stand behind the anti-gay marriage law. So they're just out to make sure that gays can't marry each other because in the face of Christ, it's a sin and all this other crap. It's just dumb. And I guess what pissed me off about it at first was, you know, the words anti-gay, because I've got a lot of gay friends and I'll get into that too. But, you know, it's not anti-gay. It's anti-gay marriage. And the funniest thing about it, if you think about it, if you know, you know, if you've got gay friends, if you know some gay people, when it was legal, when that window was open, of all the friends I have who are gay, who, you know, have partners, have been partnered for a while, they weren't interested. It was like, hey, you know, you guys can get married. Yeah, I'm not the marrying type. Because look, I mean, this is what we used to say all the time. If gay people want to get married, have at it, brother. It's no freaking picnic. You know, for a lot of people, they're like, oh, I would never do it again. You know, for me, I love being married. You know, it's all about who you're with. But, you know, marriage, our story is different. Our story, you know, we lived together for so long, it didn't matter if we were married or not. We just felt like we were married. We only got married to appease our family. And then we eloped, which pissed them all off. So F you. Ate some chicken. Anyway, I got a problem with Chick-fil-A's chicken. you know, more than anything else. But I don't think that you should stand behind any anti-group, be it anything, anti-gay, anti-black, anti-Hispanic, you name it. Anyway, that's a whole other discussion, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to press on it too hard, but he pissed a lot of people off, and a lot of celebrity chefs got ripped. I mean, seriously, they were pissed. I'm going to talk about a couple of vegetable dishes I want to share with you. One is from Chris Constantino from his book Beginnings, and another one is just kind of a basic recipe from a Eat Local book that just kind of showcases produce, especially stuff that's growing right now. And you can do anything you want with vegetables. I tell you, I've really discovered the beauty of eating things raw. You know, root vegetables, any other kind of vegetables, raw. You know, we don't cook our fruit. You know, usually we don't cook our fruit unless we're making a pie. You know, so why do we cook our vegetables all the time? And they say, look, if you cook vegetables, you're cooking nutrients out of the vegetables. And I think a lot of times there are things like broccoli I have started to not like cooked. I like it raw. I don't like it cooked. It just got a funny taste cooked. Another one was zucchini. When you cook zucchini, I couldn't stand it. It basically, it smelled and tasted to me like pond water. So I started eating it raw, and I liked it a lot more. So, you know, I'm not a vegan or a vegetarian, so get off my ass about that. It's just, you know, I just like certain things in their natural form, like fish. Oh, yeah, yoy. You cook a fish, or you give me some fish raw. As long as it's fresh, I'll eat that. It's funny, too, we're in the middle of the Olympics. This is happening right now. And every time the Olympics come in, of course, this is not going to happen anymore after this year, but Michael Phelps and his caloric intake always comes into question. People find out that this guy's eating 12,000 calories a day. He's working out 5 hours a day in the pool, but he eats like a monster. And the question is, he's going to retire after these Olympics. So what the hell is he going to do? What's going to happen to him when he retires? Because you're used to eating that way and living that life. He's going to have a hard time weaning himself off of that lifestyle. Do you see Michael Phelps turning into like just big fat bastard? You know, I doubt it. I'm sure he'll find a way to wean himself off, or maybe he'll just work out less little by little and then eat less and then get used to just being, you know, a normal guy. But look, when you're spending that kind of time, 5 hours a day in the pool, working out in the gym, God only knows what other kind of cardio he gets in. I mean, dude, look, I run for 60 to 90 minutes, and I'm not exactly melting the soles off my shoes. I'm not that fast. But an hour after my run, I'm famished. And I'll eat like a protein shake right after my run. It's like kind of like my recovery drink. But then an hour later, man, I'm starving. I can't imagine what kind of fuel it would take to keep your body when you're training that hard, to keep it up. He trains 6 days a week, exercises 5 hours a day. So he uses all those calories that he consumes. And we talked about this 4 years ago. What a crazy diet this guy has. But his breakfast is like, you know, there's an example they gave. 3 fried egg sandwiches with a lot of cheese, lettuce, tomato, fried onions, and mayonnaise. He drinks 2 cups of coffee, then eats a 5 egg omelet, 1 bowl of grits, 3 slices of French toast with powdered sugar, and 3 chocolate chip pancakes. Now, no wonder the dude is smoking pot. Oh my God, you get that? You're gonna have to have the munchies to eat like that. For lunch, about a pound of pasta with tomato sauce, 2 large ham and cheese sandwiches with mayonnaise on white bread, plus energy drinks that equal about 1,000 calories. Dinner is about 1 pound of pasta with sauce, a whole pizza, 6 to 8 slices, and more energy drinks. You know, they're making this shit up. He's maybe eating those kinds of calories, but he's not eating that food. Athletes aren't eating pizza and pasta and cheeseburgers and fried eggs and come on. Yeah, some of this I could see, but it's like, you know, he's going to Kentucky Fried Chicken. No, he's not. I mean, a lot of food does not mean you have to eat, you know, like a lot of cheese and just a lot of fried stuff. But Don was telling me, you know, Don was a cyclist. When I met him, he was still into cycling, but he's just come off of this team. He was racing with this team. He used to work in a bike shop. And I would ask him, you know, what kind of diet are these cyclists on? Because they'll eat a ton. He had Tour de France riders, anywhere from 8 to 10,000 calories a day during a race. I mean, dude, if you ate all day, I don't think you could get to 10,000 calories. They got to pack it in. But, you know, like I said, what happens when he retires? What happens when these riders retire? I mean, you ever seen a cyclist? These professional cyclists? Lean machines, man. And they're pounding down 10,000 calories?
They're burning it all off. When they retire, it's like, look, it's like any other kind of regimen you put yourself on, like diets. So there's some days going to come you have to stop. Not just athletes, anybody who goes on a diet program, like Jenny Craig, Nutrisystem, or these cleansing diets, which are just ridiculous. You're shitting yourself. You get on one of these programs, it changes how you eat. But you can't stay on it forever. You can't, you know, you can't be drinking Nutrisystem shakes forever. It's not food. So what happens when you get off? A lot of people who go on these programs put weight back on because they never knew how to eat right in the first place. That's why it's important to understand nutrition. It's important to learn how to cook healthy. And if you make that your lifestyle, look, you're not going to shed those pounds as quick as you would if you were, you know, on Jenny Craig or Nutrisystem. And look, I'm not saying those things don't work. Because you see these spokespeople, they've got these, you know, these actresses on there. And they come on, they're huge. And they get off, they look great. But if that becomes your lifestyle, you know, cooking right and eating healthy, you know, you'll lose weight slower, but you'll lose it eventually if you, you know, mix in some exercise. And then you're not going to be overweight or have issues with your health. And you'll have a new lifestyle and a new body. But I did some math recently, and it kind of shocked me, but it really shouldn't. It didn't shock Katrina. That's because I was doing some shopping. And, you know, during the week, we eat pretty simple stuff. And we don't have a lot of time because, you know, our jobs right now, especially considering everything we're going through, there isn't a lot of time to actually concentrate on cooking during the week. So I tend to buy, you know, mass amounts of protein, put them in Ziplocs and deep freeze them and take them out when we need them. But during the week, basically what our meals consist of, for the most part, are simple staple meals. About four times a week, we'll do a simple staple meal. And then the other three, usually on the weekend, we'll do other things where I'll actually get fancy and I have more time to play around. But the staple meal kind of consists of protein, either chicken, pork, fish, beef only once or twice a month for us. And at least one green vegetable, sometimes a root vegetable, sometimes a starch, potatoes or rice. And the vegetables, usually whatever we can get in season. That's kind of a staple meal for us. It's easy. It's fast to prepare. It's very healthy. You know, after work, I can put together a meal in that, like, less than 45 minutes. As long as I plan ahead, you know, defrost the meat, make sure it's all done, season it, and get it on the grill or whatever. The chicken meal for the two of us costs us anywhere from $3 to $4, depending on the vegetable. $3 to $4 total. If we have pork, slightly higher, about $5. Fish is in the middle, about $4 or so. The beef meal, which we'll usually do on weekends, considerably higher but still decent, around $10 to $12. Because beef, especially the beef that I buy, tend to be a little bit more expensive. But this is for two people total, for the entire table. So it is definitely worth it to cook at home if you can pull it off.
All right, Donnie, time for a beer review.
I'm ready.
What are we having this time?
Wow, look at this.
We've got Stone Smoked Porter.
With vanilla bean and with chipotle peppers.
Now, this came as a limited edition in bottles here in the, it's just beginning of the summer.
Okay.
I like Stone Smoked Porter. It's not crazy, over-the-top smoky.
It's a good balanced porter. I like it.
Yeah, it is. I've never had it with anything else in it, and you have. And I remember back when we were doing Dude Night, one of the first videos we did was at the Real Ale Festival.
That's right.
And one of the cask, the Real Ales that they had there was the smoked porter with chipotle peppers. You got a chance to taste that. I didn't. And what did you think of it?
I thought it was fantastic. I think it was the beer of the day for me.
I remember you saying how much you liked it.
I loved it. I thought it was fantastic.
So these come in 12-ounce bottles. They're not readily available. It was a limited edition, so if you didn't live in Southern California or in one of those select markets where they actually provided it, you probably didn't get a chance to taste this.
As they say in Russia, tough shitskis.
Yeah, that's right. And also tough shit to open this fucking thing, will you?
All right. Yeah. We're going to start with vanilla bean or chipotle?
Well, you pour a little of each, and we can just kind of, bounce back and forth. And
all right.
Say.
Openzy.
We're having a bit of a mild summer at this moment, but I think by the time this probably hits the net, it will not be so mild.
Okay.
He's poured the vanilla. That's done.
Vanilla's in.
Now we're going to go for the chipotle. people don't realize that chipotle pepper is actually basically just a smoked jalapeno. That's all that is.
Damn good one, though.
Yeah, but, you know, what happens is jalapenos are, you know, it's an underestimated pepper. I mean, a lot of people don't think it's all that hot. It's a hot pepper. I mean, it'll get you in a boo-boo.
Well, they're kind of like Russian roulette, because you can hit one of them that'll be hotter than hell, and the next one will just kind of be this deep-bodied.
What's your obsession with this whole Russian thing? The Tufshitskis and now the roulette? What's...
I don't know. It just kind of comes together. We're okay. Full of the beer.
All good.
Yeah.
So,
all right. We've got on your right.
Well, the first thing I'm noticing is that the head on the vanilla bean is lighter. The head on the chipotle pepper smoke porter is darker. Do you notice that?
Could have been my inconsistency in pouring.
Oh, well, it's consistent across the board here. I'm seeing it on both glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll go right.
Let's give it a little. Gonna try with the
vanilla bean.
Vanilla bean first.
Going vanilla bean. Getting the smell here.
Oh, I smell that.
Big time.
Oh, that's taking me way back.
Sweet. Smells like cupcakes.
With a lot of hops. Holy shit. Wow, that's interesting.
That's about all I can say right now.
Have you had it with vanilla before?
I've had other beers with vanilla before, and I've always kind of been of the belief that vanilla is good for French toast and, you know, chocolate chip cookies, but not for beer.
Can I be open and honest here and say I don't like this?
So far, it's not doing it for me.
I don't like this.
No.
I like this beer. I don't like it with vanilla in it.
Agreed. Yeah, I don't like the vanilla finish on it. It's kind of a sweet where it should be more depth, and it kind of falls flat.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the longer I taste it, the more it's almost like a vanilla extract flavor instead of a vanilla bean flavor.
Let's go to Funky Town. Try the Chipotle.
Yeah. Now we're going somewhere.
It's funny that both these beers kind of smell the same.
This one has a little more depth in it.
No, it smells exactly the same as the other one. To me. Look at the size of my nose.
I was going to say, yeah. Don't be sucking any of those foam the head in there. I like that better.
That's much more vegetal.
Yeah, much better.
You know what these do, adding these flavors, is that it makes that smoke bit of this beer a little more subtle. The smokiness isn't like really pounding me in the ass like it normally does.
The smoke's gone away a little bit. But I'll tell you, I'm not that impressed with either one of them. I've had the smoked porter with chipotle at the brewery.
Mm-hmm.
On cask and in the keg too, right off the tap,
right.
And it's been fantastic. Where this one here, the chipotle really is not coming out too well.
Yeah, I'm not saying I'm getting any kind of oxidation. I'm just getting a very light finish, and it's not punchy at all. And I don't know, maybe by putting vanilla bean and chipotle in this beer, it kind of it doesn't add anything. Maybe it takes something away.
I agree. I do not like I don't like the vanilla bean at all. That one I don't even plan on finishing the glass. But the chipotle's good, but I would like to have a little more of a chipotle flavor or effect on kind of the finish.
You know what I do like? I like the fact that we've got vanilla bean in one of these, a chipotle pepper, which is a strong flavor, in another one. And I couldn't tell you that there was vanilla or chipotle in either one of these. It's not that powering. It adds something to the beer. But you don't know what that something is. And I think that a lot of times what people do, or breweries try to do, is they try to make a beer by putting something in it, and all you taste is that one thing. And I think that that's a little heavy-handed, gets carried away.
Well, I think the vanilla bean's there, and it's much more predominant than the chipotle. And the vanilla bean is not a flavor profile that I like in a beer.
Let's go back to the cupcake, shall we?
Let's go back to cupcake. Let me try cupcake.
Now I see, and now I'm smelling vanilla.
Yeah. Maybe that could be because it's warming up a little bit, opening up.
Perhaps. Well, yeah. I put this one in my ass, or actually next to my ass, to warm it up a little.
Oh, okay. Between your legs?
Yeah.
I don't like it. Creamsicle.
Do you not like it because it was in my ass?
No, mine was not.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. What?
My beer was left here to open on a natural basis. Yeah. No, it's fine. But no, it's kind of... You know what it reminds me of? Is that Boont that we had.
Boont Amber Ale. Oh, yeah. No, that beer, something was funky with that shit. That went bad. That beer was bad.
But it has that same a similar flavor.
I wonder if this is what's happened. What happens to these beers when you add this stuff is that you get that type of flavor.
Could be.
It's like, what was the? It's not DMS, right?
No. There's a strong vanilla flavor in this. There's definitely a vanilla flavor, but I just don't like it in beer.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that. 100%.
I just don't like that flavor in beer. I'll take the Chipotle over it any day because it's very subtle. And in fact, I'm almost wishing there was more. You know what? Which one is it? The Chipotle coffee porter or stout that's out from Bootleggers.
Mm.
That has a great finish.
Bootleggers here in Orange County, Fullerton.
Yeah, that Chipotle beer is really good. The finish on that, you can definitely taste it in the back of your throat.
Right.
Where this one, you just don't.
It was a great day when we did that Real Ale Fest, man. We were out there. It was hot. It was June. This is back in 2006. And they gave us, I think, 10 taster things. Our wives weren't going to drink all theirs, so they gave us the rest of theirs. Tasted our beers, but basically we were sitting there with 20. This other couple we hook up with had tasters. They realized all these beers were really fucking strong. So they said, here, take our taster tabs. What'd we have, like 30 apiece?
Oh, man, we had so many.
I got ripped.
We were very relaxed by the end of that day. This, actually, the Chipotle smoked porter now is, after it's warmed up a little bit.
Yeah, it's starting to warm up.
I'm starting to get more of that Chipotle flavor in the back of my throat.
I don't think it's that bad now.
I think it tastes great.
Okay, I think we've...
Now you notice it?
Yeah. I think we've hit it. We've said all we can. Thanks for doing this with me.
Hey, my pleasure. You can bring beer over anytime.
Well, I will. As a matter of fact, I'm going to bring another one next week.
Sweet. And I'll drink it.
So, foie gras is now basically, it's been banned in California. It's illegal to sell foie gras. And it went into effect. And for weeks leading up to the ban, and I talked about it before on the show when it was going into effect, there were these restaurants that had farewell to foie dinners. Bobby Bogner's restaurant here in Los Angeles, he held a special dinner on the day that it went into effect. The funny thing is, and there was so much talking about this, that word has it, this is an unofficial word, that it will not be enforced by law officials. So if you serve foie in your restaurant, and you're basically going to deal with a lot of protesters if they find out, but the law officials are a little too busy, as Dave Lieberman said, chasing down real criminals, you know, murderers, rapists, people, thieves, you know, gangbangers, all the other problems that we have in our society. When all that's taken care of, when the streets are safe, then we'll go after these nasty chefs that are serving duck liver. But you know what I think's going to happen? I think that, look, they gave these animal lovers their day, you know, they had their time, their 15 minutes. I'm sure they're sleeping very safely at night. They feel so good about themselves. This is going to get overturned here. All right, just as Chicago overturned it, we're going to see it overturned. I mean, look, we're practically ready to legalize marijuana. You think inflated duck liver is going to stay illegal here when people are smoking pot? You got to be kidding me. No way. The thing is, I mean, chefs are getting crazy. They're serving foie, and they're like, wait, you can't serve foie. And he goes, no, listen, you got to read the law here. It says I can't sell foie. So what I'm doing is I'm serving it to my guests in my restaurant as a gift from me. And by the way, those green beans are $79. So there you have it. Look, and I've said this before, I don't give a shit. I don't have to have it. It's nice. I'm glad I tasted it a few times. But like I've said before, it's like Dom Perignon. You ever had Dom? Great. I had it. But for the price, I'm not going out of my way to have it again. The difference between a $5 bottle of sparkling wine and a $20 bottle, pretty great. But the difference between that $20 bottle and a bottle of Cristal or Dom, for me, not that great. Not really. Not for the cost. The $15 difference between 5 and 20, I get it. But $80 or $120, nope. There is nothing quite like foie gras. But it's something it's not something I'm going to miss, all right? If I never have it again, like black truffles, okay with me. It'd be great if everybody could have it. There are so many other things to eat, so many other satisfying things to eat. But this whole thing is stupid. And I read this recently in El Pai de Cachon cookbook, and it's an eye-opener. You know, and we, you know, of course, we've rehashed this so many times now. Unless you're close-minded, you're one of those tree-hugging pita nuts, this will just fly right over your head. Listen to this. Force-feeding of ducks and geese is a practice that derives from careful observation of the natural behavior of these birds. They overeat instinctively just prior to migration in order to stockpile energy in their livers in the form of fat. Thus, the liver of a wild snow goose will go from approximately 60 grams to over 130 grams during this period. In Quebec, foie gras is obtained by fattening the ducks. For the first 3 months of their lives, they eat as much as they want until their livers reach its maximum size. It is only during the 12 days prior to slaughter that the ducks are force-fed. In conditions of impeccable cleanliness, the farmer feeds the birds corn twice a day, increasing rations progressively to prevent causing any stress to the animals and to get them gradually accustomed to the regimen. The techniques used today have reduced the time of force feeding to about 5 seconds per duck, so the total time of force feeding in an animal's life never exceeds 2 minutes. This process produces a delicacy with a subtle and incomparable taste. This is why El Pai de Cachon is pleased to give Quebec foie gras pride of place on its menu. Now, if they're doing it like that in Quebec, where the hell are they doing it in Hudson Valley? You know, where really good foie comes from, where a lot of what we're eating here comes from. So Jose Andreas, this is long before the foie gras ban. Of course, you know, I'm late to the game and all this stuff right now, and I apologize. But I had to address this. So he's on CBS, and listen to this.
Renowned chef Jose Andreas owns the Think Food Group in Washington. He is an outspoken advocate for improved health and nutrition. Good morning.
Good morning.
So tell me what you think of this ban, and what is, are we making too much of it?
Well, I think we should let the legislators to start taking care of what's happening in the economy in California and not getting into something like, is that the right thing, that liver the right thing, or that liver not the right thing. It's very funny to me that no legislator has driven to the farm to see how actually a duck farm operates. And you cannot be legislating without knowing. So this is the first thing that I don't think is right. Come on, guys, if you're gonna be moving forward something, first, you have to have all the knowledge before you're gonna be moving something so important.
California's not the only state, though, that's been concerned. Other countries have been concerned.
Correct, countries like Israel or countries like Argentina. But come on, I mean, we've been eating foie gras for over 2,000 years. The way these farmers are taking care of the ducks today has improved dramatically over the last 20 years. So here, what we are doing is punishing farmers that really are taking care of those animals like never before. So I'm saying, let's go to the table, let's talk, let's be rational, but let's not ban something. Why? Because if we ban ducks right now, guys, start forgetting about chicken, start forgetting about turkeys on Thanksgiving, and about your hot dogs and burgers on the 4th of July. This is what's behind this law. It's something kind of very dark. The foie is like an easy win for the groups that are trying to ban almost any meat.
So you think, Jose, you're thinking they're trying to ban almost any meat, but there have been some legitimate concerns about the way food is processed in this country. You heard the chef there say there's not probably any animal who enjoys the process from the farm to the plate. Are there other areas you think should be looked at right now? Chicken, for example, veal?
Of sure, no. But what we are seeing is that the food industry is working very, 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 very hard to improve the food that us humans eat, and also to improve the living conditions that every single animal that we eat, you know, come on. At the end of the day, we are killing every one of those animals. I mean, if you're saying that the way we treat the duck is kind of inhumane, guys, what are you think? What do you think in the way we are killing them at the end of the process? Come on, we are at the top of the chain and we are eating animals. I think the farmers are improving the way they're taking care of those ducks, and I don't think that should be the reason why to ban. What we should be doing is talking, and talking how we can be moving this issue forward. But banning things is not a way to be moving forward this issue.
Some people will say, as you know, that you're simply voicing your pocketbook.
Well, you know, this is a very sure way to see it, because right now with this ban, I'm not an economist, but I know that we're going to have hundreds, if not thousands, of people losing their jobs because of this ban. And, you know, I don't think we should be having legislators putting people out of business, out of jobs, especially in a moment that what we need in America is to be taking care of the people, to be taking care of job creation, to be taking care of growing the economy. So something like this to me is very sad, especially in California that we have so many issues with the economy, et cetera, et cetera.
Just one last quick question for you, Chef. Do you find it at all cruel the way that some of these animals are force-fed to create that foie gras?
Okay, I'm going to be answering you with, I've been to those farms, I've been in the Hudson Valley, I've been in New York. Mm-hmm. I've seen how the farmers, they've been taking care of those ducks. I've been in Spain, in a beautiful farm in Extremadura, in the southwest part of Spain, that farmers are really changing and improving the methods of feeding those ducks. Me, I have no issue. We've been doing this for thousands of years, and to me, I have bigger issues in America, like making sure that children are not hungry, creating jobs, et cetera, et cetera. That's the real issues to me. I don't think that we are doing something wrong to those animals. Actually, when I go to those farms, the only thing I see is very happy ducks, very happy chickens, very happy porks, and things are improving day by day.
A happy duck and chicken. Thank you.
So listen, I'm sure if you didn't know about it already, and the intro gave it away, and I kind of spoke about it a little in the beginning here. Dan Cathy is the CEO of Chick-fil-A, and he was outed for giving money to an anti-gay marriage group. Now, he considers himself a fine Christian, and as a Christian, he feels obligated to support Jesus' obvious intolerance for things like homos and black people and anybody who's not just like him, because Jesus hated anybody who was gay, a whore, poor, or not exactly like Jesus. And if you don't believe Dan, you should read the Bible, because it's all in there. If you're gay, you're bad. If you're just like Dan Cathy, you're good, because Dan Cathy is like Jesus. So, of course, given our current climate of tolerance for everybody, which I should remind you is more like Jesus than this Chick-fil-A douchebag is. I mean, look, Jesus said we should love each other and be nice to each other. So we're trying. But every time I turn around, there's another hate group out there. And everyone is losing their shit over this. And they should. And look, I had a nice little debate on Facebook with Bogner over this, and Bobby made a rational point. Look, it's his money, and he has a right to support whatever he wants, and he supports his right to do whatever he likes. And that's true. But my argument is this. We don't have to support that. There's no room for anti... Every time you see anti-anything, yeah, it turns my stomach. Anti-gay, anti-black, anti-Hispanic, anti-midget, anti-obese, anti-skinny, anti-anything, especially anti-foie gras. Not fucking cool. If the words I'm against fill in the blank cross your lips, and that blank includes any group of people, it's time to do some soul searching. What are you about? What are you hiding? For all we know, Kathy's a closet homo who doesn't have the balls to come out like everybody else. Look, if you don't think it takes balls to come out of the closet, you're kidding yourself. It's painful. The stories I've heard, rough. It strikes home for me for a lot of reasons. Look, and it's got little to do with food, because I got a problem with Kathy's food. I tasted it once. It was okay, but it's fried chicken, dude. I mean, that's fast food. But I got a lot of people listening to this show right now who are gay. Friends. I got close friends who I love dearly, like members of my family. Provide support for me, for Katrina, through this ridiculous battle with cancer. Human beings with heart and soul. They're dear friends of mine. I would do anything for them, just as they would do anything for me. And a lot of these people didn't want to get married in the first place. So this whole thing's kind of dumb. But they should have the right to do that if they want. I mean, they don't judge me for being straight. That would be lame. So why would we judge them? I don't give a shit about their sex life any more than they give a shit about mine. This is why I don't talk about it. Kind of sucks, too. You know, they had to deal with going to their parents, telling them that, you know, that they like girls if they were a girl or men. And then waiting for a response, not always a good one. I never had to tell my mother I was attracted to women. It was a given. And look how lucky I am. I'm male, I'm white, I'm straight. Holy shit, that's the perfect trifecta. I don't have to deal with any bullshit from anybody. If you're the opposite, female, black, and gay, you got a struggle on your hands. So when a douchebag, redneck motherfucker like this comes out against your desire to marry your girlfriend or your boyfriend and tells you what a sinner you are, do you think that makes your life any easier? He can take that chicken sandwich, stuff it up his bigoted ass. I don't support his right to sell that horseshit food he's pitching, but I'll turn a blind eye to that. This I will not tolerate. And we're not alone here. Celebrity chefs like Art Smith, openly gay, came out against him. John Besh, Katrina's chef crush, he's not gay, but commented that, you know, look, everyone's got a right to their opinion. But he's more of the live and let live ideology. Although he does kind of question where his chicken's coming from. You know what pissed me off about this? Kat Cora, she has the worst freaking timing of all times to get a DUI. She'd have been the perfect celebrity chef to come out against this bullshit. Listen, Art Smith is cool and all, but Kat Cora, hottest gay celebrity chef there is. And think about this. How low are your inhibitions as a celebrity with everything she has going on in her life? How low are your inhibitions that you would drive drunk? If she can throw that kind of caution to the wind, what other kind of surprises is she capable of? You know, you follow me? Dude, listen, hot lesbian, you know what I'm talking about. We get drunk, we do things we're not going to do if we're sober. And someone like her, come on, listen. Listen, I've done some stupid shit when I was drunk. We've all done dumb stuff. And I'm not discounting the fact she was driving drunk. All right, that's bullshit. But she shouldn't be doing that. But what does she do when she's drunk? That's all I'm saying. And look, Art Smith, great, but you're no Kat Cora, my friend. And somehow this went from me defending gay rights to fantasizing about Kat Cora. That's wrong, and I apologize. But this is serious. This is a serious situation, and a hot, drunken, gay celebrity chef. So cities like Boston, Chicago coming out against this dude. San Francisco, of course. A lot of here in California, up in arms. They're saying they're not going to allow him to open new franchises in their city. Every day there's a new development, and it's getting old. But he brought it upon himself. You own a major fast food chain? Keep your politics to yourself, pal. Expect shit like this to happen when you make a political move like this and people find out about it. It'll be interesting to see how devoted he is to that sentiment, guilty as charged. If he's truly devoted to this and he'll let it hurt his business, great. But I knew about this Christian thing. I can't tell you how I knew about it. I had a friend who was kind of like looking into a franchise, and he says, "Boy, it's a little crazy." And I can't speak to the food, okay? It's not the kind of place I would normally go to for lunch. I think I had it once when they first opened a place in San Diego. When I was in my 20s, through college, and was just kind of broke, I used to go to KFC, started selling these chicken sandwiches for a dollar. And I would go at lunch and have them in a pinch, you know? And they had this chicken sandwich at Chick-fil-A, and I remember, you know, that it tasted kind of like the KFC sandwich, but I don't remember a whole lot else. But, you know, he's got a right to do whatever he wants. Sell the fried chicken, hate on gays, give your money to any organization you like. I'm just saying, if he was giving money to the KKK or an anti-abortion league who supported shooting abortion doctors or any hate-driven group, this guy would be on his knees right now because it's just not cool. Somehow gays are not treated with that, you know, with the kid gloves that other groups are. And I wonder sometimes if it's harder to be gay than it is to be black. Again, I don't have those dilemmas, but I'm going to stand up for anybody who does.
Recently, homosexuals have been threatening a sacred union between a company and its customers. Come on! It's AT&T, not AT and Steve. Recently, companies like JCPenney and Oreo Cookie have come out in support of gay rights. But one fast food company has drawn a line in the lard.
For years, people have criticized the fast food franchise Chick-fil-A for donating millions of dollars to groups that oppose same-sex marriage. Now the company's president, Dan Cathy, is responding to that criticism, saying, hey, guilty as charged.
Now, no surprise, Chick-fil-A supports traditional marriage. Unlike KFC's Double Down, two chicken breasts rubbing up against each other, that is nothing but a lesbian fantasy snack. I think the people who are criticizing Chick-fil-A are nothing but a bunch of monsters. Furry ones.
Makers of Muppets cutting their ties with Chick-fil-A. The company president of Chick-fil-A, Dan Cathy, recently announced the company was guilty as charged, that's his words, opposing gay marriage. Jim Henson Company had been working with the chain to create products for the kids' meals. After the announcement, though, they ended that partnership.
Oh, no shock there. The Muppets have been pro-gay for years. How else do you explain a couple of bitchy old men who love going to the theater together? I don't know. Doesn't seem right. Thankfully, people are stepping up to defend Chick-fil-A, like innocent teenager Abby Farrell, who defended the company from the Muppets on Facebook. Although the conspiracy theorists accused poor little Abby of being a fake front for the corporation just because her account was created yesterday morning and her profile picture was a stock photo of a teenage girl.
So for my birthday this year, Katrina bought me a couple of cookbooks. And one of them was Chris Constantino's Beginnings, which was kind of a left turn because everybody thought if Chris Constantino did a cookbook, it was going to be about cooking, you know, awful, blood and guts, things like that. And it wasn't. It's about, you know, first courses. Italian, a lot of Italian stuff. Some meat courses, but a lot of vegetable courses. And some really interesting use of a mandolin. And I'm looking through the book and a lot of thinly cut stuff in this book. One of which was this thing called dirty vegetables, which was like a root vegetable salad, raw, cut paper thin with a mandolin. The thing was, I really wanted to make this, but the mandolin I have is a plastic mandolin. And it's handheld mandolin by OXO. And it worked okay. I mean, I could cut potatoes with it. I could cut like potato chips, thinly cut stuff like that. But to actually do stuff that, you know, like root vegetables are kind of thick, kind of hard. And you need a precision piece without cutting yourself. Because a lot of people cut themselves with these things. So I said, I want to get a good mandolin. So Katrina, of course, surprises me and buys me one. A larger than I expected mandolin. And wasn't that expensive. I think it was like $100. It had a stand on it, stainless steel. It's got interchangeable blades. And you can get all kinds of fancy cuts and stuff on it. But this thing does an amazing job. So I got it and I made this salad. And of course, I couldn't get exactly the stuff he used, but I just went and bought a bunch of root vegetables, what I could find in season. And I put a picture of it on the website. You can check it out. And this is, it's called Dirty Vegetables, but you can call this whatever you want. He calls it Dirty Vegetables because he takes a truffle, a black truffle, and shaves it over the top of these vegetables to make it look like there's dirt on them. Because the story was, that he tells in the book, it was that years ago, he was doing a demo at the farmer's market. And there were all those people that shop there. And you've probably seen this if you go to the farmer's market. People go for the first time. They see vegetables at the farmer's market, and they've got dirt on them. They're like dirty, like they haven't been cleaned. And they're like, oh, these vegetables are dirty. Where do you think they come from, Sherlock? They come from the ground. You know, the Earth's bounty? It doesn't just fall from the sky, pristine. They're used to going to the supermarket where everything is like, man, they do some serious merchandising. Have you gone to the supermarket lately in the produce section? My God, do they make it look fantastic. Well, it doesn't look that great when you're at the farmer's market, man, because they don't have time to do that shit. That's why it's so cheap. So they're pulling stuff out of the ground, just brushing it off or, you know, maybe shaking it a few times, but you're going to have some bugs and some dirt on there. Wash them, okay? Quit being a pussy. So that was the thing. So what he did was he took a bunch of root vegetables, sliced them thin, and then he just kind of sprinkled some black truffle on it so it looked like it had dirt on it. But, you know, black truffle is expensive. You can't find it. And you can just do without it. So what I used, what I had in season, beets, carrots, radishes, parsnip, turnip. I can't remember what else. Oh, and what he does here is he mixes in some greens. And he used mache, M-A-C-H-E. I don't know, is it mosh, mache? It looks like baby spinach or maybe arugula. I'm not sure what that is. What I ended up doing was I used a little blend of baby kale, baby chard, and baby spinach. And then you make a vinaigrette. The vinaigrette's a champagne vinaigrette. 2 tablespoons of champagne vinegar, 1 teaspoon of fresh lemon juice, 2 tablespoons of pure olive oil, and then 2 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil. Now, if you can't get the different kinds, just use 4 tablespoons of olive oil. You'll be fine. And then kosher salt and freshly ground black pepper. Mix all that together, season it, let it set aside, and then keep tasting it every half an hour. Taste it and see, you know, where the seasoning is. If it needs more salt, add some. But that's the sauce. I mean, that's the dressing. And then you just thinly slice whatever you have. Beets, carrots, turnips. I think mostly that's all he used. Beets, carrots, and turnips. And that parsnip was great. Oh my God, it tasted like perfume. That was pretty dramatic. But like radishes I put in. Daikon would be a good one if you could find that. And just get fancy. You know, play around with it. They're really good. They're really good raw. Like I said, I love eating thinly sliced vegetables raw. Like broccoli, like I said, I can't stand broccoli now when it's been cooked. Lightly cooked. I like it crunchy, and I just like the way it tastes raw. Oh, that's what I did. I had the stalk of the head of broccoli. I kept the florets. We had the florets later, but the stalk of the broccoli, I shaved it. You know, I peeled it, and then I thinly sliced it. That was really, really good. A good pop. So you can check out the picture on the website, and I'll put the recipe for this. Although it's not really much of a recipe, I'll put it on the website as well. So that's a good first dish. And if you want to follow it up with something else that's in season right now, and really, you know, kick up the vegetable thing a notch, I've got another recipe for you. It's grilled eggplant cannelloni with ricotta and prosciutto. Now, cannelloni, it's like manigot or manicotti. They're basically pasta shells that you stuff with ricotta. And then you put a little tomato sauce and some Parmesan or mozzarella cheese, and you put it in the oven. You bake it for about 30 minutes until it's bubbly. And it's kind of a popular Italian dish. This is doing the same thing, except you're not using pasta. What you're actually doing is thinly slicing some eggplant, grilling it, and then using that as the pasta. You're then, kind of getting a ricotta filling, putting that on top of the eggplant, and then rolling it, and then covering that with some tomato sauce and some cheese, and then baking it. So it's a vegetable version of that dish. Now, I don't know, does this count as a vegetarian dish? Because do vegetarians eat any kind of cheese or any kind of a cow product? What is the ruling on that? I know vegans don't, but vegetarians might. Vegetarians are kind of weird, man. They've got so many little kind of rules. Like, you could be a vegetarian and eat fish and call yourself a pescatarian. A pescatarian. Oh, man, that's interesting. I'm a meatitarian. How's that? Because I like vegetables a lot, but I also eat some meat. So I'm a proteinitarian, I guess. Anyway, what you want to do is this. You get a couple large eggplants, all right? Keep the skins on them. Just cut the ends off. You know, the little green part where it connects to the plant. Cut that off. Cut the bottom off. And then get that mandolin out. And you want to cut these things to about a third of an inch to a half an inch thick a piece, okay? Slice them. Set them aside. Put them on a plate. And then drizzle a little olive oil over each piece. Brush it on really nice. Season it with some kosher sea salt or some kosher salt or some sea salt. Put them on the grill. Grill them for about 2 minutes aside to get some nice grill marks on them. Soften them up. Just kind of release some of that moisture that's in there. Take them off and set them aside. And then make this ricotta filling. It's 2 cups of whole milk ricotta cheese, okay? 1/2 cup of pecorino romano or some Parmesan. 1/3 cup of minced prosciutto. Now, if you want to keep this completely meatless, you can leave the prosciutto out. 2 tablespoons of minced fresh Italian parsley, 1 large garlic clove that you've minced, some ground black pepper, and 1 large egg, lightly beaten. Mix all of that in a big bowl, mix it up, that's your sauce. Now, I know some of you have this thing for using dried herbs. Fine. If you like the Italian seasonings and stuff, you can throw some of that in there, put some basil in, just make it taste however you like it. If you want to add some nutmeg, that's always a good thing to kind of talk in, and it kind of brings out a bit of a fruitiness to the ricotta. And that's basically your filling. So what you're going to do is you're going to lay a piece of this grilled eggplant down, take the ricotta filling, and you're looking at the eggplant now, right? It's vertical. So go from the bottom to halfway up and just kind of lay a nice soft little layer of the ricotta filling and start rolling it. And what's going to happen is as you roll it, it's going to push that ricotta filling up the eggplant. So by the time you get to the end, every piece of the eggplant should have something on it. And that's basically how you do it. You just basically make them like that. So now you've got them all rolled up, right? Now we're going to make some tomato sauce. Now, there are lots of different types of tomato sauce you can use here. One of the greater recipes that I've seen recently came from Scott Conant. It was on No Reservations Techniques episode, I believe. And what he did was he made this authentic tomato sauce that really showcases tomatoes more than anything else. It was basically tomatoes and olive oil. And what he did was he took a couple pounds of Roma tomatoes, which is really good to use Roma tomatoes for sauce. Get a big pot of boiling salted water, and I mean get it boiling as you can get it, and then take those raw tomatoes as fresh as you can get them, pluck them right there into the water, let them sit for about 5 to 10 seconds, start pulling them out, and you should see that the skins are loose and starting to rip. Put them directly into a pot of ice cold water, like an ice bath. Let them sit in there to cool down a little bit, and then peel the skins off the tomatoes. They should come off really well. It only takes about anywhere from 5 to 10 seconds in that hot water for those skins to loosen. and you don't fully cook the tomatoes. You just get it, you know, a little loose. So you peel the skins off the tomato, and then take all the tomatoes you have and just put them in a pot, and then separate the seeds from the inside. Get as much of the seeds and the juice from the inside as you can out of the tomato, and kind of separate that in another bowl. So that becomes kind of like your tomato water. Save that, because what you're going to do is you're going to end up adding some of that tomato water back into the tomato puree. So you've got all these tomatoes now, right? So get a pan. And get a little bit of olive oil in the bottom of the pan, very hot pan, and then throw those tomatoes in that you've peeled and deseeded them, and then use a potato masher to kind of mash down all those tomatoes into kind of a chunky tomato liquid. And as the tomatoes cook, they start to exude liquid. And what to actually help that process is to season them with salt. Now, I don't know, a teaspoon of salt to start with and go from there. And just, you know, don't be too liberal, because you can't take it back. Just enough to kind of get some liquid coming out of those tomatoes. So then let them cook for about 30 minutes on medium-low heat, and keep stirring them so they don't burn. And continue to stir. And you'll start to see those tomatoes break down into a sauce. In the meantime, what he does is he'll take a saucepan, a medium saucepan, and he'll fill it with a couple cups of olive oil, maybe a cup and a half probably for a recipe like this, of olive oil. And then he'll, inside the olive oil, he'll take basil, a bunch of fresh basil, and about 10 cloves of garlic. And he'll put that in and add some red pepper flakes. He'll put that on very low heat over the stove to kind of become an infusion. And what it does is it creates an olive oil basil soup. And the basil gets really wilty, and you start to smell all that basil and the garlic in the olive oil. He'll strain that after it's done. He'll let it, I think about a half an hour, he lets that sit. He'll strain that. So all you have is pure olive oil. He'll put that olive oil right directly into the tomatoes, and then mix that around and keep stirring it. And what you end up with is this emulsion of tomato without all that other stuff, but you still have the flavor of basil and flavor of garlic without there being any of that stuff in the sauce. And that is a perfect sauce, a very good sauce. You don't have to add any other herbs to it. Although, of course, you know, look, if your tastes are that you like those dried Italian seasonings, go ahead and use them. You know, it's your sauce. Do what you want. But that's a good base sauce. So what you do now, you've got all those eggplant rolled up, right? You take your tomato sauce, you got like a big Pyrex casserole dish, or whatever kind of casserole dish you have, lay a layer of that tomato sauce along the bottom, add those eggplant rolls directly over the sauce so they're nice and snug, cover the top of all those eggplant rolls with the remaining tomato sauce, or just enough to cover it, and then cover that with some freshly grated Romano or Parmesan cheese. Get a chunk of Romano or Parmesan and then grate it so you've got these shreds of cheese over the top. Or if you want to use mozzarella, you can certainly do that. Get it in an oven at 350 degrees. Let it cook for 20 to 30 minutes till it's nice and bubbly. And that is the dish. Now, you have that raw salad as a starter, this as a main. I am telling you, you're going to eat well. It's going to taste incredibly Italian. And you'll have just a wonderful, healthy meal. And doesn't cost a whole lot to do that. And a really good way to just kind of showcase summer vegetables that are happening right now.
Joining us now on the phone, Jenny Jones of the Green Party and member of the London City Council. She sponsored legislation to ban McDonald's and Coke from sponsoring the games. And Catherine Mangu Ward, managing editor of Reason Magazine. Okay, great to have both of you with us. Jenny, let me start with you. What made you decide to do this? I mean, obviously, it's too late to ban any of these guys from sponsoring the Olympics. So why did you decide to do it now?
Well, what we really want to do is to have the Mayor of London, the government, the British government, and, of course, the London Organising Committee for the Games to actually recommend in their post-Games briefing that sponsors such as McDonald's and Coca-Cola really should not have any links with such a sporting event that's basically about supreme athleticism, supreme fitness, while they are promoting terrible junk food.
Catherine, let me ask you a question, because I know you've opposed this kind of legislation in the past, and I know there's Olympic athletes, you know, Usain Bolt, he says, hey, I love eating McDonald's, but those numbers that we showed are pretty troubling, and more so to have that be the exclusive food available at the ultimate sporting event on Earth.
You know, it's clearly a weird circumstance here where it's the only food available in the Olympic Park, but this debate is really about, you know, is it McDonald's fault that we're fat? And, you know, the fact is, everywhere else in the world, all the time, you'd have to make a pretty weird choice to eat that diet 2 days in a row, much less 17 days. There are always other options. This is about personal responsibility. Big Macs do not have a strange hypnotic effect that causes you to have to eat them forever until you're 10 million pounds.
Well, I might disagree because I love eating them, but I mean, but I get your point. But you do admit that there is an issue or something about having this be the only food you can get is McDonald's at the Olympics.
You know, I think it's actually a pretty small payoff, or it's a pretty small trade-off for what McDonald's is doing here, which I think should be getting them karma points, should be getting them credit. They're promoting exercise, which is at least as important as calories in, calories out. Go swimming, do a cartwheel.
Could I possibly interject here? Because, of course, that's complete nonsense. McDonald's actually promotes deep-fried, highly processed, high-fat, sugar, salt, chemical-filled junk food, and they make it absolutely tasty so that people keep coming back. They absolutely don't give you the full story on all this. And quite honestly, Britain could have had the Olympics without Coca-Cola and McDonald's as sponsors. We actually didn't need them. And it's utterly depressing to think that children in Britain who are already becoming obese and their parents becoming obese are going to have to put up with endless ads on television, seeing these companies that they have no interest in our health. They only have interest in their profits.
You know I talked about this, these food trucks. And I mentioned that we used to call them roach coaches back in the day. And I mean, way back in the day, I used to work in these industrial complexes. You show up to work hungover. Since you were young, you know, we partied a lot. And you'd never had time to cook for yourself or bring anything for lunch. Or if you did bring lunch, you didn't have anything for breakfast. And you didn't realize how hungry you were going to be, because there's something about being hungover that makes you hungry. You know, or maybe if you feel like if you ate, you might feel better. So they'd come around 9 o'clock for the breakfast break. And you'd say, I'm not going to order anything today, and you'd end up ordering something. And it was usually like breakfast burritos or with chorizo and stuff, and it was a lot of Mexican stuff and sopas. Those things, for some reason, man, they suck up alcohol like nothing else. So we would order those. After a while, someone would say, they start calling them roach coaches, and you're like, what are you saying that for? And I go, wow, you should see these things. You know, they're a health hazard, and there's roaches, and they got rats at night, and it's really unsanitary. And of course, you know, we didn't know if any of that was true, but back then we didn't know how the health department worked, and sometimes they just didn't check them. As city ordinances got tighter, the regulations became a little bit more stiff, and I don't think we had these problems today. Anyway, we called them roach coaches, and they used to play this song. And the song was the La Cucaracha song, because it was Spanish. We never knew the lyrics to the song. Well, out listening to Adam Carolla, his latest book is not Taco Bell material. And I got the audiobook version of it because I got a new car, and it's got all sorts of interesting features. One of the features it has is a little USB port where you can just plug a jump drive in there, and you can play music through several sources, XM, CD, iPod. You can play through Bluetooth. You can stream whatever's coming through your phone on it. But one of the cool features is I like to separate all my stuff. So I'll take a jump drive and just throw podcasts and audiobooks on it. And if I ever want to listen to something like that, I just hit the USB button, and then I'm listening to whatever's on there. So for long trips, I like to listen to audiobooks. So Adam Carolla is telling the story in this book about the Roach Coach song, and I thought it was really funny. And I thought I'd share it now.
You heard me mention Olga, my Guatemalan nanny, a couple moments ago. And if you bought my first book, there's an anecdote or two about her in there as well. No complaints about Olga. Super fucking hardworking. Salt of the goddamn earth. We were sitting home one night while my wife was out with her friends, spending as much as she possibly could on sushi. The twins were about 3 or 4, and we were watching the Pixar film WALL-E on DVD. When Wally's little friend the cockroach scurried by, Olga, who's training my kids to be fluent in Spanish, because let's face it, if they're going to live in Los Angeles one day, they might have to call 911, and there's no fucking way the person on the other line's going to speak a lick of English, right? L.A., if it's not Tijuana yet, will certainly be Tijuana by the time my kids get into high school. Not to say that they have high schools in Tijuana, but you know what I mean. Either way, when the little cockroach scurried by, Olga said to my twins, La Cucaracha. I paused, drank this in, and said, Olga, you speak Mexican. How do the words go to that song that was played off every lunch truck on every construction site I've ever worked on? Da 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 da. She thought for a minute and then began the Spanish to English translation. She came up with this. It's about a cockroach that gets its legs pulled off and is buried on a hill with a mouse and a buzzard. I went crazy. This is the song they play to let us know it's chow time? A song about an amputee cockroach? Oh, a mouse and a buzzard? Now I'm starving. I don't know, maybe it's one of those Smuckers things. They're so confident in their product they can remind people of cockroaches. What's up, Mexico? You guys don't have a maggot song? You couldn't just hit that metal triangle with the wooden spoon, huh? You gotta play a song about a cockroach to let everyone know on the job site it's lunchtime.
You know, just when I think that I'm a funny guy or that, you know, I can tell a story, this guy's nuts. He's just a true professional. Makes me want to give up. You know, unbelievable. Anyway, I thought that was funny. And that is all I have for today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for being so patient. And thanks for your thoughts and prayers for us. Everything's going to be okay. We're just, we got to take it one day at a time and keep marching forward and do some more ass kicking. Thanks to Comedy Central, CBS, CNN, and Ace Broadcasting for the audio. Music in this episode from Escape the Fate and Cascade. If you like the music, follow the links on our website, mylifeasafoodie.com. Buy the songs for 99 cents. Don't forget to join our Facebook group. Follow us on Twitter, where I have obviously become a shill for Nike products. And subscribe to our channel on YouTube. Until next time, my name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie.